Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today we talk about Trump's meeting with the tech CEOs, and the Force is back. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
You are Black Hollywood.
Yes. The rhythm, the rebel, without a pause, I'm lowering my level.
The hard rhyme.
Winner never been a man.
You want styling?
You know what's time to get deep. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm not Chuck D, obviously. It is not 1989, clearly.
Oh, man.
Or 88, rather. But we're here doing some news. I'm joined with Akili Shine.
Yeah, man.
Who's happy to be here with me.
I'm kind of speechless. Speechless at the moment.
P.E. A group, a crew, not singular.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't know what.
My man's up here.
I am.
My man's up here.
I saw Rogue One last night. I ran out the theater like a little kid, like wanting to fly X-Wings and shoot blasters. I literally ran out the theater like, pew! Like ducking behind shit. I really love that movie. We'll get to that in a second. Lots to talk about. Lots to talk about, in the Trump world and sort of how he's affecting tech. Amazon has finally got that drone in the air. And we have some pop culture stuff, but before that, anything top of mind you want to touch on?
Nah, man, let's get into it.
Okay, what's been in the news a lot is a lot about these hacks and the Russia hacks and the idea that foreign agents have tampered with the election and tampered with the results and the WikiLeaks and everything else. And the thing people have said is, you know, it's really hard to sort of relitigate the whole election based on the tamperings. We know that he went to help Donald Trump, but we don't know that actually helped Hillary lose or Trump win. But unless someone knew that they were hacking the voter systems, then that's a four-alarm fire. And it seems to be the report came out that the government body that oversees the security of voting systems was hacked. Now, it wasn't the actual voter machines that were hacked, but the body that oversees the security of the voting system have. So someone was making their way to the voting, and I guess we're still under investigation, but this is serious, right?
It is definitely serious, and I think there's levels of the hacking, and I think, you know, it can be distilled down even to the voting booth, and that's what people are arguing, that if a person or a group of people or a country government has the power and technological savvy to be able to do that, you know. And, I mean, a lot of people make the argument that America has done that in many places throughout the world, hacked elections to get, you know, the person of their choice into the presidential position. So, in a way, it's kind of ironic that, you know, the theory is that it's happening now to America by Russians or by whomever. But I definitely think that it's a high level of concern, especially if, you know, what makes us citizens in this country is our ability to exercise our right to vote. And if that vote is not counted, and for us, as African-American people, it's always been a difficulty and challenge for us. But for us not to have our vote counted, it kind of corrupts the system, a system that many would argue is already corrupted. But
right. It's trouble. I think that, we're still at a point right now where, you know, the Electoral College has to officially vote. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard. It's really a bad precedent to set that, for the Electoral College to not vote the will of the people based on some information. But if it comes out that they're tampering with the voting, that's a whole other story, you know. I mean, the hacking's one thing, but the voting's another. It really undermines us. Do you think, Obama's been under some criticism for not speaking out loudly when he first got the CIA briefing a long time ago. He did say, you know, we think it's Russia, way back in July, that Russia's tampering with this stuff. He did say something, but people, and it was in the front page of the Wall Street Journal, people forget that, but people think he should have been louder.
I think it's a balancing act, because, you know, if he advocates that, you know, this theory, or, you know, if he promotes some facts that lead to the hacking of the system, I mean, that could really polarize the country in the sense that, you know, this is the concept of democracy that brings America together, and it's modeled throughout the world. And if it's not working in America, like, the effects of the detrimental effects would be massive. And so I think he has to balance that and how strongly he advocates for it or against it. And I think that's why he was probably kind of like trying to massage his way through it, out of it. That's what I think.
Right, so. I believe. And it's also like, you know, world, everything is so goddamn partisan right now. Like Mitch McConnell already said, like, you know, I guess he took it to, you know, the majority leader, Mitch McConnell on the Republican side, and he's like, you put out, we're not going to join you in a, we're not going to make a bipartisan statement. If you mention this, we're going to say it's partisan and you're trying to help Hillary.
Yeah.
So it was a really, his hands were kind of tied in that he could have spoke loudly, but then, you know, in our environment, all the right, you know, Fox News, everyone would have been, Breitbart would have been like, Obama is trying to help Hillary, you know.
Hey, just like, you know, I say, a lot of us say that he should speak more loudly for black people.
Yeah.
Same argument.
Do you think, I'm slightly off topic again, but just the Obama and the political things fascinate me. Do you think that Obama and I do will be more vocal towards black folks?
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks
after
back.
After the election.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
That's right.
I don't...
Like, he can think, now, finally.
I mean, I would hope so. Yeah. I would hope that he would use his symbolic power still, and his fame, and even his brain power to be able to affect change for us on a community level.
That's where he comes from, the community organizers.
Yeah. I hope that it circles back, but I feel like being that he's right now, for the last 8 years, been in the most powerful position of the world, he could have been more vocal to advocate things that directly affected the African-American community, because mm-hmm. when you look at other communities, you know, our community has been and really is suffering the most.
Understatement.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, like, kind of just watch 13th.
Exactly. You know?
Okay, we can go on and on. I mean, I could have to ask 1,000 questions about this. Let's move on to our friends at Facebook. I've been hypercritical of Facebook and hypercritical of Zuck and sort of like his downplaying of their role in this fake news controversy, his downplaying of his role as a media company versus just, you know, we're not the station, we're the cable that connects people, all that stuff. But now they're really making an effort to sort of crack down on fake news. They've announced this thing where they can actually sort of flag and ranks false news, right? And they also have outside fact checkers like PolitiFact and a bunch of other folks, factcheck.org, come and make sure this stuff is fact checked. And all these weird sites that are kind of like Schmoogle or whatever, or like, you mm-hmm. know, Black Hollywood Jive or whatever, like that's kind of just off the real brand. They're actually doing something about those.
Yeah.
So, and they're also, and lastly, they're also stopping the mechanism which allowed these trolls and fake news people to make money off the system.
Yeah.
So that's a lot, right?
I mean, I think that is a lot. I agree with most of that. I think that Facebook isn't a media company. I think they're more of a distribution platform. Most of the content that is shown is produced from an outside source, which Facebook obviously hosted, and they streamlined it in. So, but I do think that they have some responsibility in terms of providing people the correct information, because information is power, knowledge is power. And so if people are misinformed, and also if people are exploiting the ignorance of people and making money off of it, I think that corrupts the whole system. So for them to be able to say, no, we got to keep our distribution platform, our infrastructure clean, these are a few steps that we can take to be able to ensure that. And so I like how they're going to create a new algorithm which will promote less promote these type of stories, because you will have the partnerships with the fact checkers that will kind of like broadcast and amplify, like, hey, this is false, this is wrong, and they'll even put it, you know, underneath or somewhere, post it on the actual screen that, hey, this has been fact checked, this is inaccurate. And so it gives people it makes people less inclined to be able to do this type of stuff, because it may not get as much traction and visibility as it once did in the past. So I like the fact that they're saying, hey, flag in the soil with this, we got to do something about it.
I agree too. I've been critical, but I think this is a good move. And frankly, for me, like, Facebook can do anything. I mean, mm-hmm. Facebook has the resources and the R&D resources to, you know what? We're going to figure out how to, like, whatever. They can put their brain part on anything. So this is something for them to kind of throw their hands up, like, I don't know, the fake news is inexcusable. So I'm really glad that they did that, and they seem to be addressing some things. And I just, you know, I've been reading a lot about Zuckerberg, though, and, like, he is... I mean, he's a ruthless businessman, you know, and he's a cold, collected, cold-hearted businessman. He's business first, but so it's good to see that he's doing something. I mean, I guess in a way, this ultimately would affect his, you know, the perception of the company, would maybe affect his bottom line, maybe not, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, you don't want to pollute the well, even right. if one drop of cyanide can poison the whole well. So you don't want to have a long-standing history of just dumb shit on your platform. So clean right. it up, clean house, and that's pretty much what he's doing. You know?
Yeah. I wonder. Do you think? I mean, it makes me wonder about. Are we going to see? I mean, because the way Zuck is, and I mean, he's now nowhere near as charismatic, but I mean, he's only like early 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, could we see like a President Zuckerberg? Like in 15, 20 years? Like what's Zuck going to be doing when he's 55 years old?
Hey, man, who knows what we'll see? Yeah. We would never say that we'd see Donald Trump as president, so no. Who fucking knows?
I know. I mean, Mark Cuban's been talked about.
I will go along that line of thinking. I will say probably some tech guy will probably be running up for president.
I mean, they're all thinking it. Yeah. They're all thinking like, shit. I mean, like, well, let's help transition to our next story. You know, Trump had all the top tech execs in and had like a big tech meeting. And they all came, and there's some like debate about whether they should have come, because like a lot of these, with the exception of Peter Thiel from PayPal, who's the arch conservative, the rare conservative in the tech world, but all these other people, like all of their company, you know, mantras and mission statements are about inclusiveness and about equality and gender exploration
percentage of their environment.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly, you're right. But like environment, but like that's kind of what they all preach. They're all liberals. They all kind of preach the same thing. And so it's really and all of them supported Hillary. So it's antithetical to the Trump message and what seems to be the Trump administration way to go about doing things. So the first question I have for you is like, should they have come? I have my answer, but should they have said we ain't coming?
Yeah, they should come.
Yeah,
I mean
the president asked you to come. President asked you to come. You come, right?
Yeah, they should come. Just like Jim Brown did. Just like Kanye did.
Easy.
Just like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of other folks will be coming to have some type of dialogue. Doesn't necessarily mean you align or agree with, you know, Donald Trump or his policies or even his team, but the fact that you're having some type of dialogue about issues and you are advocating your issues, you're putting your issues on the table, you are communicating your platform,
right.
And whether or not it's addressed, whether or not it's followed up on, or policy is made in favor of you, hey, so I applaud the fact at least that it's a conversation. These are the things that are important to us as a company, as a group of companies, and yeah, we're gonna be vocal about that and see if we can come to some alignment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, this reminds me of when Obama had all the bankers in. Like, you know, we had the big financial reforms. You know, like Goldman Sachs and all Lehman Brothers, all those people in the same room. They all hate his guts.
Yeah.
And he's talking that kind of shit to them, but they all came and they had to come see him. So, you know, same thing with the auto CEOs at that time during the crisis. So,
man.
I mean, you know, I mean, but the brain power in this room, I mean, it's Larry Page and Eric Schmidt, Elon Musk, like Tim Cook, Bezos, all those guys were there. Wasn't Zuckerberg, and it wasn't Zuckerberg from Facebook, but the COO of Facebook came, and someone from Oracle came, and it wasn't Larry Ellison. Is Larry Ellison still actively running Oracle? Do you know? I don't know. He must be, but he didn't. He's like, I ain't coming. So I wondered. In some instances, people didn't come. I mean, what's on their schedule that didn't come? But the brain power in that room, though, man, wow. I mean, it's like, you got to think that, like, I mean, Jeff Bezos has got more brain power in the dump he took last night than Donald Trump's got, you know, at all. So it's like, what can he say to them? But that's an interesting conversation. Anyway, one of the things that that came out of that with that people talked about was, you know, is net neutrality. And, you know, and this is an article that Donald Trump's transition team is really about net neutrality, really about ending net neutrality. This is what happens when you promote, you know, a bunch of generals and billionaires and oligarchs to run. It's like Goldman Sachs bankers, oligarchs, generals, and Ben Carson, you know, and it's like every person he appoints to whatever agency is someone who wants to shut down that agency.
Yeah.
You know, and so the people he's appointing to the FCC are like
they're anti-FCC.
Anti-FCC.
Exactly.
Because the FCC, all they have to do is regulate.
Yeah.
You know, this is what's amazing to me about this whole thing is the fact that, you know, all these organizations are government organizations to put regulations in place to make sure that corporations don't poison us, fuck exploit us over, exploit us, like
further, rather.
You know, further than they already do, like, you know, and so he's like, let's all the foxes in the hen house. He's like, come on in,
loosen up the reins.
Yeah, the FCC, you're in charge of it, Mister. I hate the FCC, EPA, ExxonMobil, you come take care of the EPA. You're a climate change denier. Urban development, Ben Carson, you don't think poor people should be helped out? Why don't you fix this? It's right. Like, what is so anyway? I wonder about this. Right on the heels of this meeting with the CEOs, he's talking about breaking up the net neutrality. Now the CEOs may or may not like that because this is allows them to, like AT&T and other folks, to sort of jack up the price. But I mean, this isn't good.
No, it's not good. I mean, in the whole argument about net neutrality, I mean, it's an old argument now. Like, for someone to argue against having net neutrality, it just shows where their values are.
Right.
Like, information should be given and distributed equally and evenly. All people should have the same speed and same access to information that help funnel and birth their imagination.
That's right.
So why would you want to say, well, because, hey, my competitor is offering this, I'm going to slow it down if you watch it on my platform. Right. Or why would you say to a group of people that live in a certain region, hey, well, you don't need fast internet or you can't afford fast internet, so, hey, you won't be able to get this type of video information. I mean, we live in a video-centric world now. And so you need high speeds to be able to keep up. Right. So why can't that be even and just for all? Like, why? What's the argument for it other than making more money? It's stupid.
It's ridiculous. I mean, which is the whole thing. Like, it's conflict. I mean, like, the notion that, you know, back to that meeting, like, you know, Trump in the meeting had some of his team members. Of course, he had, you know, Rand Paris and he had Steve Bannon. But he also had his kids, of course, his four kids, which is driving me crazy because this whole thing with, like, I don't want to go on a political thing, but like, God, like, you know, this whole thing about him, you know, redoing that hotel of his still so that foreign dignitaries can stay there, which means they will be actively paying Donald Trump. Foreign entities and bodies will be paying Donald Trump, our American president. That is in the Constitution. You can't do that. Like, you can't.
Is it?
Yes, it's in the Constitution. You can't do so. I don't know what the loophole is. I don't know how he's going to figure that out. And then you can't have your kids. There's staunch nepotism things. You can't appoint your children to the candidate. Like, you couldn't make, oh, my son's vice president.
His son's not.
I know, but they're all advising in the mix.
Hey, it's definitely a fine line. But I mean, it could be argued that hey, my kids aren't a part of my presidential.
And they're running his business. Routine.
Hey,
they can't. They can't.
Who's supposed to run his business?
It's
a family business.
No. His children can't have. No, his children can run the business, but they also can't have.
One's arguing that.
Yeah, they can't be in the White House.
They're not in the White House.
They are.
All of them.
He's arguing that he wants them as advisors.
Not all of them. Not both of the sons. That's not true.
Well, Don and whatever his name is, you know, I don't know whatever Bill Maher calls him. Baron Von Fuckface or whatever he calls him. The other kid, the Thurston Howell, the douchebag, whatever he calls him. But like, those two kids are going to be running the business, but also with top-level security clearances.
Yeah.
Like, how are you not reading security briefings and then making business decisions?
Of course you are.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, I can't.
It's ridiculous.
All right, well, speaking of other depressing things, the Syrian war footage, you know, with technology these days, we see that the proliferation of body cams and GoPros and, you know, VR stuff and all kinds of drones, and it's allowing some of these, you know, sort of the military in Syria to sort of, like, use this stuff as, you know, propaganda and recruiting and all kinds of stuff because it plays like a body cam video game, and it's pretty frightening. I don't know. Well, I mean, I guess this is the world we live in, but it also seems very somewhat a Black Mirror.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's frightening, but I mean, I'd rather speak to the atrocities that's happening to people and the fact that we have technology that's able to capture it and, you know, at least help to promote awareness, political awareness as to what's happening, because oftentimes, you know, it doesn't hit the news feed. It doesn't even hit, you know, Facebook, Twitter. And so we are kind of like in our own bubble here in America. We don't see necessarily what things are happening globally that are just really, really inhumane and destructive. And so, I mean, yeah, the game versus reality, like, it's clearly ramped up in the movies and ramped up in the video games, what happens militaristically. But there are some horrors that are happening in reality that I think, you know, because of drones, because of, you know, phones and cameras in our phones and us having that the access to that is ramping up our ability to capture some of the atrocities and again promoting the awareness of it. So if even if it's on, you know, the side of a terrorist or not, like I still think that it could be used for good, it could be used obviously for propaganda, but I think my point is that I think we glorify a lot of militaristic activity. We don't really necessarily see the harm and the pain and the destruction that is happening to innocent people through some of the conflicts that are being had in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these images coming from the Aleppo images are like in really.
Oh yeah, they're sad. They're really sad. Like, they're really depressing.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, like I just saw, you know, Instagram from Trayvon Free, who I follow, the writer, and he was just like, this is not a movie.
Exactly.
Like, some of these things look like a scene in a movie, like a CGI'd scene with just thousands of people. It's really, really, yeah. really horrible.
Yeah, whenever you have, last note, whenever you have innocent children being murdered and being involved in this type of conflict, it's just, I think it's just ridiculous. It's highly, best word I could use is depressive. It's just, man.
Well, we don't want to come here and become terrorists on our soil. We don't want them here.
Man.
We don't, you know, not on our watch. But it's horrible. I want to talk about, you know, Mercedes and their car sharing service. But before that, I want to talk about our friends at DraftKings. DraftKings is still kicking. We've only got a few weeks left of football. Some of us are, you know, actually in my league, I'm in the playoffs. On both my leagues, and I won my first two games.
Oh yeah,
I'm one game away from the Super Bowl in both my leagues.
Man,
I went from rags to almost riches. In my DraftKings leagues, we're doing good as well. You can still pay this late in the game. You can start late in the game, week 14. You can come in and make money right now. You can pick your team. You can play against others. It's still the best way to go. You can still play for free if you use our promo code GEEK. You play for free. So what you need to do is go to DraftKings.com now. Play for free with your first deposit. Promo code GEEK, and you can share in a package of over $100,000 this very weekend. It's a minimum $5 deposit for eligibility, but you know, it's fantastic. So check the site. Restrictions may apply. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. That's it.
Yeah.
So Mercedes is getting in the car sharing service. We talked about the idea of these companies before, and other like the car companies actually getting into the car sharing, ride sharing service. And what I didn't realize, for whatever reason, I thought they were getting to the ride sharing service like Google, like Uber and Lyft, but I didn't realize they're getting to the car sharing service like Turo and Skirt.
Mm-hmm.
Skirt. And I that's now I'm like, oh, of course, that's brilliant. Like, because it allows these giant places with fleets of cars that come in and out to be used still to actually turn around and rent them and have people drive them and still have you know, the brand awareness out there, have these cars in use, and Mercedes are everywhere, and
and expands the profitability of the vehicle, because you know, once you know your lease is up or a few years go by, you know, your car can theoretically be obsolete, so why not turn it into a passive income money making opportunity, and so to be able to lease it out.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in this landscape of social and, you know, how we interact with, you know, our phones and commerce, like, it's a perfect way to segue the automobile industry, transportation industry, and tech industry into one thing. So
right. So it's called Cruve. I don't know the name, though. Cruve. Cruve. Let's Cruve.com. Cruve? Like Cruve. Car and groove. I don't even know what that means.
Hey,
is it German?
Hey, it's actually, I believe it's, I want to say it's.
Cruise tonight.
Man, I want to say it's.
Cruise and groove?
I don't know. It sounds like it's cruise and groove together.
Huh.
It's terrible. I mean, it's right, not.
We've heard worse names.
I mean, Skirt is.
Goodbye.
Skirt is not the name either.
Good night.
Like, my new car service, Skirt! Go to skirt.com. Yeah, Skirt is not good. Turo, I don't know what that means, but I like it. I think it's a good name. Anyway.
I don't know, man. I mean, my thoughts about this. I mean, I get it in concept, but I think the future is self-driving cars that, you know, are able to be monetized when you are not using them. And that's Elon Musk's plan. You know, when you go to work, or when you're at home sleeping, or with your family and your car is parked. Whenever your car is parked, turn that parked car into a car that's monetizing for you. And so the only way to do that is with a self-driving car. And I think we're closer to that than this type of app. I think this app will be obsolete within 5 years.
Well, and it will be. And look, Mercedes is headed towards that. This is part of their what they're calling the CASE strategy. It's an acronym that stands for connectivity, autonomous driving, sharing, and electric drive system. So they definitely plan is autonomous driving. They want to do more electric driving and the sharing and connectivity. This is part of that part. So they're just saying how they're moving towards. Mercedes has a separate strategy that's moving towards that right. realm. And so I mean, you know, because we're not in a world where they can just put a bunch of autonomous Mercedes on the road, this is step one. But I agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah, I like how they're blowing up the business model, though. You know, this business model of you go buy, lease a car, and you have it for X amount of years, and you do it, rinse and repeat. Right. So I like the fact that we're thinking differently about some of the things that we purchase, some of the things that we engage in. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of cool, and this is not necessarily new, but it's new for a brand. Adidas has some 3D printed runners, some 3D printed shoes coming up. And it really, it's not so much that you can make shoes, but it's really about the construction, what it means for manufacturing, what it means for the construction of shoes, what it means for the type of materials and that you can use on these shoes. At CES, they had all kinds of BioSteel fiber kicks. They had, Parley ocean waste shoes. But, these shoes are, really, really, it looks like they're well done. They're done with what's called a 3D web structure. But the problem is they are $333? I mean, they're not like the Nike $700 self-lacing joints, but $333? What do you think of the whole 3D printing trend in shoes?
I don't think it's a trend. I think 3D technology will be ubiquitous in all forms of industry. And I think fashion, medical, all of it, And so the fact that you can produce something with different materials that you have been able to produce before in a much more efficient, quicker way. And I think the cost will come down once it becomes, more available. But the fact that you could use materials that maybe are more greener in nature, more environmentally conscious, and also provide for you the same support that traditional leathers and other materials that have been used in shoes prior to do. Like this shoe is much lighter, it's perfect for a runner, it gives you the support and stability. And I think that this is the starting point. And Adidas as a company, what they've been doing within the last few years have really been innovating. In fact, this year, I think 2016 is the first year they've actually made more money than Nike. And they're the leading sports footwear company. And Nike has had that crown for decades. Yeah. And so Adidas, obviously with their collaboration with Kanye and doing other things to ramp up, this is a part of that cadre of offering, fusing it now with technology, fusing it with influencers, all that is a part of their program. I think it's working for them very well.
Yeah, I had no idea that was the case, and I've always been kind of Adidas man over a Nike man, but Adidas has done a long, steady. They cast a wide net and being part of the culture. They made some really some high investments in culture and music and in sport, not just sports, but in hip hop culture and music and in skate culture and just all these other. They've really sort of spread their wings out to sort of be. We're not just an athletic shoe company. We're sort of a cultural company, and it's international.
Absolutely.
So way more so in fashion and other stuff than Nike. Nike's sort of banks on being obviously sport, and then they have a huge cultural impact with the Jordan brand and some other stuff. But it's really interesting to see that Adidas has moved past them.
And when you throw out the price tag on that $333, that's relative. Sneakerheads are
for
paying
you?
Thousands of dollars for sneakers.
You're true. That's
so,
true.
I think if you're in this culture and you're a collector or. You're an avid runner. This is not much of an investment.
That's true. That's a good point. But I will posit that this isn't for a sneakerhead per se. This is probably for a runner. But even to your point, if you're an avid runner, you're serious about your running, and you want the best technology, $333 is not that hard. That's
exactly.
Not to pay. So I bet I should stop crying. Okay, so moving on. iPhone 8 rumors still. So iPhone 8, there was one photo that came out a while ago with a possibility of what the iPhone 8 could look like, which is basically like. No bevels, no ends, kind of a seamless screen that kind of goes all the way around. It's all touch. And that's one thing. And then people are still speculating that that may be the case. But the other thing that's coming out is they think that they may be leading towards the wireless charging. And the reason is because there's a company called Energous, which just did an investment deal with Apple. Apple deal supplier Dialog Semiconductor. So this is kind of complicated. But Apple. Dialog Semiconductor supplies a bunch of goods to Apple. Energous just did a great deal with them, so at least people believe that through Dialog, Energous will be developing this technology, which will eventually go in phones.
Yeah.
So I mean, it could be big.
I mean, I think it is big. We talk about all the time on the show how Apple. Really our argument is starting to evolve now, but how Apple has been an innovator in the marketplace with mobile technology. And how they've kind of started to decline in the last few years in terms of their presence, in terms of their sales, in terms of everything. And so I think having a new technology like this is what we call a change the gamer, in the sense that you can now charge your phone wirelessly in the span of 15 feet or 6 feet or whatever the footage is. Like, that is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, the capability of that, because we are literally attached to our phone, and obviously the thing that paralyzes us is when our phone dies. Right. So to be able to have a technology or to have an auxiliary device that's able to charge while we're still using our phone and we're not connected to it, that is pretty profound.
Yeah.
And I think that will obviously lead to other devices, i.e. tablets, laptops, who knows, Apple Watches, where you can charge it and not have to worry about plugging that bad boy in.
Yeah.
That changes the culture.
It does change the culture. Maybe one day we'll see, some sort of implanted device that.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I'll keep going back to Black Mirror. So an implanted device that helps you, like, keep your heart pumping or something. You gotta stand against the wall and get charged up. I don't know. But it's something. It's really, really something. And I agree. So you've been like the Apple cynic and critic. You're like, man, the 7S is just like the 7 and the 6 is just like the 7. Like, I don't care. So, but you think that the 8 will be something good?
No, I don't. I don't think. I think that this is a rumor, number one.
Right.
Number two, I think another company is going to come up with this technology first, and I think Apple might make it better. But yeah. I don't think Apple's going to introduce this to us, because Samsung has the one where you can place it on the thing,
place
it on the charger without plugging it up. So, I mean, they already have the technology. Just, okay, so now six feet
more. I mean, whatever was the freshest, newest thing, Samsung had it earlier. I mean, exactly. They're dropping phones in the water,
Samsung
charging it, like all that stuff. I mean, exactly. So... I don't know why Apple can't be first, but they do get it right. So
right,
most times they're not.
They get it right with the Apple Watch.
They did not get it right with the Apple Watch. I told you not to buy it.
Yeah.
All right. So next, Bezos has done it. Like the Amazon makes his first drone delivery to a real customer. Now I've got a lot of questions about this, but there's a video they posted about it, and it's kind of talked about it. And it looks as if it's not quite what we would see. All of the mock-ups showed of it, which is like a drone hanging out carrying a package around.
It's
a little more sophisticated than that, actually.
Absolutely.
And I was wondering how that package would be secure, and it's actually like something that's encased in the body of the drone, which is above the flying apparatus, above the propellers, if you will.
Below.
No, it's above. Like this, like with the package is up there. Oh no, that's a fake one. That's the fake one. This is the real one right here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's the one that we were wondering how that would look. But the real joint is this, and it's the package is up top, and the thing's up ahead, and it makes more sense. It's GPS guided. They have a crazy video of it, the whole thing. Now they're testing it out in rural England, in rural United Kingdom. So the way that test runs, there it is. The way that test runs is, it goes from a package center. It flies out 30. My man ordered some popcorn and a fire stick.
Yeah.
13 minutes later, it's at his door, which is fantastic via drone. But my man lives on a giant farm. Like, the shit landed, like, I don't know, like, looked like a quarter mile from his house.
No.
He had to walk way out to the cornfields to get it.
There were no cornfields, and he walked out maybe 30 feet.
I don't have a landing pad in my crib. Like, how does this... So I think it's all fantastic, and I'm all joking aside, but, like... first of all, get your takes and all this and all that stuff. You saw the video, but let's also. But how does this work in urban areas?
Well, again, this is beta. And I think it's very smart for them as a company to test it out in a place that's rural so that you get all the kinks and quirks, you know, get all that stuff out of there.
Yeah.
Like, once they are able to perfect it, you know, I don't think it'll be an issue. Obviously, it's GPS. They use GPS for the navigation. It's completely autonomous. Once you put in the order, there is a person that's manning it, you know, in the warehouse. But the drone knows exactly where to drop it off and knows exactly how to get back. And I think that is pretty profound and is doing it pretty seamlessly.
Yeah.
So I think having it in a place where, you know, you can mitigate, you know, it falling or crashing and falling in the school or hitting someone, falling in traffic, like, hey, cornfields is a perfect place to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. But I think this is really something what Amazon is doing within this last few weeks, within the last month, they dropped Amazon Go. They're changing the game with how we buy stuff, how we shop for our groceries. They said they're going to put $3 billion into their Amazon content business, mm-hmm. and develop, you know, original films and TV shows. And now they're doing now they're doing this, like with the drones, the Amazon Prime stuff. Like they are really innovating. I don't know another company right now, quarter four, that's doing what they're doing. I think it's incredible.
I agree 1,000%. I was just thinking about this. I mean, like, so you have Jeff Bezos, who's the CEO. All this question of, like, you know, is, you know, what is Facebook? Is it a technology company? Is it this? I mean, first of all, let me ask you this question. What is Amazon? Amazon is not just a technology company at this point, because they are shit. They've revolutionized
distribution shipping.
They've revolutionized distribution. They are
a content company.
They are an amazing content company.
Yeah.
They are, like, no doubt a retailer, although they don't produce their own goods. There's no Amazon Watch or Amazon this or
Amazon. That's not true. Their own hardware. We've said the Fire Stick. They have all sorts of stuff. They have the Kindle. They have all sorts of shit.
I take that back then. So they are a retailer.
Yeah,
they're a retailer. They're leading it almost in retail just by sheer volume, and that's next to Walmart. They're definitely revolutionized leading in shipping. Now they're getting into the grocery home delivery and then the grocery store game. Now, and then if you want to watch their shit, they've got original programming to keep you in their universe.
Exactly.
And now a drone's going to fly to your crib and deliver your popcorn. Like, if you're Jeff Bezos overseeing all these things, like, that's a lot to oversee. It's not like you're just checking that you're like, I'm the CEO of Netflix. You're doing it all. This is pretty audacious.
It's phenomenal.
It's pretty ambitious and audacious. And, you know, we talk about Facebook all the time and blah blah blah. But Amazon's no, and Google, but Amazon's no slouch.
I think it's phenomenal because all the things we just outlined, like they're all separate entities. Like,
yeah.
For instance, if you look at a company like Apple, like most of their offering is in the same space.
Right.
Their offering is so diverse, it's so different, and they're killing it way harder than other companies that are doing it with just one thing, one category. They're killing it in multiple categories.
Right.
That says a lot about their future. It says a lot about their thinking, their culture, and just what they're bringing to society. Like, I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm dick riding Amazon right now. I'm just gonna say it.
Hey, yo, it's not. They're 8x Netflix, and then they're a lot of money in the game, and they could. I just wonder when they start looking around trying to buy folks. When they start acquiring stuff. I mean, not everyone's for sale, but they start acquiring stuff. I mean, man, I don't know. We'll see.
Got the Amazon Echo, man. Come on, Doc.
Well, especially
they got so much stuff.
Especially after Trump deregulates everything, you get a parking ticket, and you're. Amazon's going to get shut off.
Man.
You know, who knows? They're all connected. Anyway. So, moving to get to some pop culture stuff. Just a couple quick hits and we get out of here. Rogue One comes out today, and as we're taping this on the Friday, on Friday the 16th. Rogue One comes out today, drops today. I saw it last night. It is amazing. I think it is an amazing movie, and I loved it as a Star Wars fan. I loved it as a movie fan. I loved it. I cannot recommend this enough. I was excited about it, and I saw it, and I was, like I said, I left like wanting to fly X-wings and shoot blasters and run around, and frankly, it's not like anything we've seen before. It's a war movie. It's a war movie.
Right.
Sean Finnessy over at The Ringer said it's the best war popcorn movie since Saving Private Ryan. Which I'm like, wow, and I thought about it. I'm like, well, okay, yeah, okay. I don't know.
I mean, I can't think of nothing that comes more recent. I don't know.
I mean, with Dunkirk's coming next summer,
right.
the Christopher Nolan joint, which looks insane. Anyway, are you excited about this?
Yeah, definitely excited about it. for obvious reasons. You know, we both love Star Wars. You know, this is a part of, you know, telling stories that, you know, we never imagined would be told on film.
Absolutely.
And so to be able to see, you know, to see some of something that's nostalgic but also future facing, I think is dope. I mean, obviously the trailer looks great. You've already seen it. You know, I think it's going to be a smash home run. I say it's going to be a grand slam. There have been, you know, some criticisms of it, though, and maybe I'll throw it back to you. Well, some of the criticisms have been that the character development or even some of the storytelling is very it's not well executed. It's like very cookie cutter, formulaic, and I guess they will want more expansion of some of the ideas that are going to obviously be unfolded in episode 4, 5, and 6. They want to be able to kind of like give more specificity to some of those things, and it doesn't do that. So what is your take on those two things?
My take is that I believe that that's true to a certain degree, but it doesn't bother me. These characters aren't there for us to live with them forever. They're there as functions. It's like, it's a war, but like, so when you watch, I don't know, Saving Private Ryan, for instance, or like From Here to Whatever, like From Here to Eternity, like what's the other one, The Longest Day, or any of these famous war movies, even Full Metal Jacket, for example, you get introduced to the character. These characters are archetypes as part of a platoon, and then they go off and they do the thing. Even like the Dirty Dozen, like they go off and they do a mission. Dirty Dozen is a better example. So you don't get intricate portrayals of each of those 12 guys and deep insights into their psyche. I mean, you do get some of that. You do get some of that here.
Okay.
You do. I first of all, I disagree with that assessment. I think that those characters are, for the most part, pretty well rounded.
Okay.
There's a couple in there that. There's a couple in there who you wish you knew more about,
right?
But I don't know, man. It's really about two individuals and the group around them, and it's about the larger mission,
right,
which is obtaining the plans to the Death Star.
Does it expand the knowledge around Star Wars, though? Like, you know, obviously this is one bit of information they built a whole movie upon, but does it make you have a firmer understanding of why things happen in Episode 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, well, Episode 4. There's some definite, like, hardcore connective tissue, to 4. And like, if you're a Star Wars head, there's a bunch of shit. There's a bunch of Easter eggs and a bunch of stuff, a bunch of subtle references, a bunch of characters, like people that are on screen for like 10 seconds.
Right.
That you're like, oh, that's so and so.
You connect the dots.
You connect the dots. Or, oh, that's why he did that. Whatever. There's a lot of that. And then there's more blatant stuff. There's, I mean, you know.
More direct.
No spoiler alerts here, but there's some actual characters that show up.
Yeah.
You know, from A New Hope.
Yeah.
And there's some technology used to do that.
Right.
And I must say, it is spectacular. Like, I mean,
did you see it in 3D?
I did not see it in 3D.
Oh, my God.
I had a choice. I had the choice to see it in 3D or not 3D. I just, you know, I'm not big on the 3D conversions. You know, if it's shot native 3D and the director's like, you have to, I've shot this for you to see in 3D,
right,
or I've shot this for you to see in IMAX,
then
yes.
But
if the studio's like, can you make it in 3D? It's like, I guess. Then I'm not sure. They ain't getting my money. You know, that's ridiculous. So I don't know. Gareth Edwards, did not conceive this as a 3D movie.
Right.
Disney did.
Right.
You know, they want the 3D money.
Wrap up that money. Yeah.
So we're going to get out of here. But there's a couple other things we can get to, but we'll get to them later. I'm going to do want to mention the Star Trek Discovery. Lita has been announced, and this is my girl from Walking Dead, Sinquia Martin Green. She's going to be playing Lieutenant Commander Ransford on Discovery. It's not going to be a captain base. It's going to be from the perspective of, like, maybe the number two or someone else, which was Brian Fuller's idea before he left the show. It sounds, you know, good. She's the first African-American female lead, because she's not a captain. I like it. So we'll see how that unfolds.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I like it, too. I think it'll be awesome. I'm a big fan of her. So
yeah.
I think she'll be great.
Yeah, I think she'll be great, too. That's really it. That's it. What do you got? Anything else?
Nah, man. Did you catch the Bruno Mars carpool karaoke? Oh, it's great. You got to watch it.
It's
hilarious.
Happened? Oh, no.
It's hilarious.
I'm late. I need a Madonna one and a Bruno Mars one.
Bruno Mars is great.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's Bruno Mars. He's incredibly dope.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got. That's all you got. We will we're off for like 2 weeks.
So yeah, we'll see you in 2017.
Yep, you guys have some happy holidays and a happy new year. And we didn't really do a year in review kind of joint, but maybe we'll do like a brief recap of some stuff that we liked when we came back. All right. So that's it. Where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can they find you?
Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you very much. I'll see you soon.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.